How you doing, Technorama crew? This is the frequent guest of Chuck and Craig, and I'm starting to feel that winging it vibe. I'm the guest that won't go away, but this is T. Morris, and I got good news. The 8 Cormac, well, it's behaving, and because it's behaving and because everything is working, as far as I can tell, oh yeah, and I did double check, it does have 8 cores, because you know what? Apple makes 8 core Macs. Everything's working, and now Moravi Remastered is underway. And this might be news to you. You might have already subscribed, but Craig approached me and said, I heard the preview that you did for J.C. Hutchins and Seventh Son. Would you do one for Technorama? And I'd be more than happy to. And that is why I'm doing it right now. In fact, to show you that this is an exclusive for Technorama, right now you can hear it. It's just coming up to my lips. I'm having a beer. I'm looking at what I'm drinking right now. And it is the Winter's Bourbon Cask Ale. Ale aged on bourbon, barrel oak, and vanilla beans. It's a limited edition. It's a seasonal brew. It is brewed and bottled by Anheuser-Busch of St. Louis, Missouri. It's a very valiant effort, and it's got a lot of potential. It has a real nice finish, but I'm just not... My taste buds aren't doing anything when I'm actually tasting the beer. You know, if you didn't get into the microbrews like I do, that would be a really nice departure from the other stuff that Busch does. But yeah, for me, 5, low 6, that sort of thing. So that being said, what is Moravi Remastered? It's me going back to the very first podcast novel I ever did, Moravi, The Chronicles of Rafe and Ascana. And while I was podcasting Bill About Battings, which features our boy Chuck, I started to get the idea, you know, I'd love to go back to Moravi and give it this kind of treatment. The special effects, the music, all that. But re-recording it just seemed like a really intense thing to approach. So this is what I'm calling the grand experiment. As Kirk described the Excelsior in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, which Scotty replied with, aye, and if my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a wagon. So there you go. But that's what this is. This is me going back to the original AIFF files and tweaking with them. So if you like what you hear and you want to hear the entire episode, check out www.moravi.net and have a listen. And Chuck, Craig, thanks again for inviting me on to Technorama. Until next time, 101, baby. Imagine That Studios, in association with Dragon Moon Press, presents a podcast novel by T. Morris. Moravi, The Chronicles of Rafe and Ascana, written by T. Morris with Lisa Lee. Read by T. Morris. Prologue, A Leap of Faith. The captain could hear the roar of powder kegs in his ears, but he could not move from where he fell. He wondered how long he had been there. He tried to remember if it was the sudden lurch the vessel took that sent him to the deck. He was having a problem recalling anything. His mind was jumbled, lacking focus. He lost track of time. The deck shuddered underneath him.
That was a well-placed volley, he thought as he worked harder to catch a breath. It was taking the same effort to hoist a sail, to breathe. My ship, he repeated silently. My beautiful ship. Please forgive me, my king. I have failed you. The captain closed his eyes. It was just too much of an effort to keep them open. Suddenly he found his awareness peak. It was an apex of all sensations at once. It did not overwhelm him. It did not hurt him. There was a strange, comforting feeling in this place of sound, and slowly the thunder of cannons grew farther off. Farther off than they were in truth. The captain is dead! Cried one of the privateers over the fire raging below decks. The captain is dead!
The first mate is down as well!
Another sailor bellowed as he passed a full water bucket to another.
Mind the fire!
Shouted a third from the top deck.
If them powder kegs catch fire, we'll have done the Spanish a good service. Keep them buckets coming!
It was in 1492 when the New World was discovered. From this land of legends, legends that included cities of pure gold, mountains of gemstones, and exotic delicacies not found even in the travels of Marco Polo, explorers of the landmass called Europe launched brave and bold expeditions to bring back treasures for royalty. Some of these men sailed around the world. Some never returned. Still, man was embracing the arts and sciences with a newfound passion, instilling fear in the religious leaders of this world. It was an age of enlightenment, a new dawn of humanity that was being dubbed as the Renaissance. Part of the Renaissance was an ingenious new tactic of reaping the New World's treasures without hazarding costly voyages across the Atlantic. Rival nations called it common piracy, but the king of one particular realm called it by a different, more civilized trade. Privateering. King Henry VIII of England looked upon the open seas as just that. Open. Open to all nations. Open to opportunity. As privateers, these common pirates were agents loyal to and pardoned by King Henry. They possessed letters of marque that specified what ships they were allowed to engage and which were free to navigate the oceans of the Atlantic. The latter were usually King Henry's own. This gentleman's piracy came with a price. If privateers were captured, there would be no rescue, no ransom, no return voyage home. The letters of marque were worth less than the rope used to hang privateers for crimes of piracy. This is why the captain filled a good portion of his hold with powder kegs and cannonballs. He always wanted to assure escape if under fire. Now the English faced the added challenge that their advantage did not turn against them and blow the king's calling out from under their feet. Sanders watched the men heed his earlier advice, and now they tamed the fire for the time being. The Spanish warships were still closing. In his eyes, there was little to be gained from this voyage.
We should abandon ship. We've lost the captain. The first officer is dead.
No, we will not leave the ship, Mr. Sanders.
A deep voice sounded over the chaos of the deck. It was distinguishable for two reasons. It carried with it a bass deep as a thunderclap. It also carried a sharp-edged accent, thick, and not of the usual dialects found in England.
The captain would have wanted us to stand and fight. It would also grant the wishes of Allah to send these Spaniards to a fiery death for firing on his children.
He was a Moor. He towered over most of the Englishmen within the ship's complement, but his size, coupled with his powerful voice, did nothing to elevate his standing. His ebony skin and beliefs made his status as outcast and heathen amongst the crew apparent.
"I think your brain's been cooked after too much time at sea," snapped Liam Sanders.
Sanders stood eye to eye with him, his own height equal to the Moor's. The man was far from any lofty position of leadership on the king's calling, but Sanders' stature, sunken eyes, and gaunt-like features gave him an intimidating look apart from the other Englishmen. Many times he was asked to speak for the crew, although the Moor hardly felt this man spoke his mind. The Moor could never openly share his opinions, but he suspected the man to be nothing less than a coward. For a heathen, his instincts were quite accurate. The mainsail turned sharply, its massive form suddenly billowing to its full shape as the wind trapped itself within the weave of the fabric. The crew siding with Sanders watched in amazement as a second sail caught the same breeze. They could feel the ship's hull shift forward as their course changed abruptly.
"Again, lads, heave!" A voice rang out over the thunder of cannon and volley of fire that slammed against their starboard side. "I did promise my sister Serena I'd be present for dinner 2 days from now. I will be damned if I will keep her waiting." The small band of privateers tugged against an array of thick, heavy ropes, while another secured the cables to hold fast the sails. The self-appointed leader then assumed the captain's podium at the king's calling, wiping away the blood from the maps with the cuff of his shirt. He muttered coordinates to himself as he made light charcoal marks against the charts. His actions were hurried as another volley of cannon fire came from the pursuing ships. A smile crossed his face as he could hear the cannonballs splash into the water, showering the deck harmlessly with water and foam.
"And just what you think you're doing, snotty?"
Sanders hated being challenged on what he considered was his ship. This young whelp seemed to relish in doing just that.
Snotty was the nickname Sanders dubbed him, as he carried himself a little better than the rest of the crew. Snotty's first month on board brought him a few floggings from Sanders that left his face and parts of his body black and blue. Still, the boy stood up to him. He became untouchable when he was promoted to the position of ship's navigator. Now that the captain and first mate were dead, nothing could keep Sanders from openly challenging him, as well as calling him Snotty. "Ensuring our return home to England, or are you so blinded by fear you did not notice that?" The navigator shoved him against the deck and drew a modest foil from his side, the tip resting against Sander's neck. "We have no captain, no bosun. I, for one, do not wish to live out the prime of my life in a Spanish prison, provided we are not executed for piracy. Now stand down and let me plot this course." "They have matched our course and draw close," the Moor shouted as he saw the Spanish ships catch their breeze. "We have a course plotted." The navigator stomped hard on the planks underneath his feet and shouted down to the whipstaff's crewmen sharp commands that eventually led to the ship's rudder. Once more, the king's calling shifted as the navigator sheathed his sword. "Now, let us hope the Spanish are not as mad as we are."
Sanders followed the light marks against the chart, his eyes widening upon their destination.
"You have plotted a course for the graveyard of lost ships!"
The lumbering man grabbed the navigator by the cuff of his doublet and tossed him aside. "You there!" his voice boomed, freezing two young sailors in their tracks. "Fetch us a white banner! We're surrendered!" The chill of an iron barrel pressing against the back of his neck cut his order short. Sanders turned slowly to find the giant Moor aiming the ornate rifle at his head. The Moor's training in the weapon was merely a formality. He was never permitted to handle it in combat, a lack of trust that neither the captain nor first mate would acknowledge openly. He would have never thought his first chance would be used in an act of mutiny. Or was it mutiny? They had no one in command. Only this navigator, still very green in his time spent upon this vessel, seemed to have a direction they all needed. It would be a direction that would get them home.
"Master Navigator has a plan I think would work better than facing a death sentence in Spain." "You savage! Lower that rifle before I whip you soundly!"
"I crave a pardon, Mr. Sanders, but I am on the better end of this rifle."
Over the sounds of deck fires and Spanish cannons, the successive of the rifle's hammer pulling back to a firing position sounded clearly in their ears.
"You wouldn't dare, Moor."
"I have made my peace with Allah." The Moor slipped his finger around the trigger. "Have you?"
The collection of privateers, their faces bloody or blackened by the smoke of battle, had gathered on either side of the gangway at the sight of Sanders, held at gunpoint by the ship's outcast and young navigator. The mighty sea breeze that pushed them across the waters widened small tears in the sails, but still they managed to keep a lead from the closing ships. A few ears caught what words were exchanged at the captain's podium, and these words were quickly passed from crew member to crew member.
They were tired. They were afraid. And they waited for an order. Now only the wind catching the torn sails sounded in their ears.
"Our navigator means to take us to the graveyard of lost ships! This is madness to be certain for the Moor sides with him. If we surrender with no fight, we might find mercy at the hands of the Spanish." "I doubt that," the navigator snapped. "Do you forget what we do for king and country?"
The enemy ships were closing. Fast. It was clear they did not intend to take them back to Spain to face a trial. It was the laws of the sea they would answer to, with three Spanish captains serving as judge, jury, and executioner. There was a hint of uncertainty as the navigator walked into the gangway, his eyes looking at the crew and then at the closing ships. Then, in a moment, the fear and doubt were gone. In their wake, resolve and determination. "Lads, we have not known one another long enough to build a trust, but the captain trusted my talents in navigation. I know where we head may unleash more dangers upon us. Rest assured, you have the word of your navigator, Rafe Rafton, that I shall get you all home."
His blood coursed through his veins. The excitement in his tone gave his words an edge that made them appear hasty and erratic. "If we dare the graveyard, the Spaniards will break off from pursuit. This is a leap of faith I ask of you all. If you grant me this boon, I promise you all a round of good English ale at the anchor. Come along, lads. What say you?"
They could not hide their apprehension. What did this lad know of strategy upon the ocean? He did not even have a proper beard upon his young, fresh face. Still, without a captain, it was this bravado upstart that rallied a handful of the crew to fix the sails. Now they sailed into an area of the North Atlantic Ocean that no one would dare to chart. It was off Ireland's Emerald Coast, where Arctic winds would send ships into a patch of sea that opened up and swallowed them whole. So the legends told. Any ship heading into the graveyard was never seen again. Be it rocks, fog, or sea monsters, no one would ever know for certain what claimed them. The privateers looked to one another with knowing grins. No better time to find out what secrets were in the graveyard than now.
The Moor lowered the rifle and smiled.
"Guess we are following you, Master Rafton."
The king's calling had taken a pounding from the Spaniards, but still she managed to float. Yet their speed was decreasing as the sail's numerous tears were widening from the wind's force. The crewmen made ready weapons in case of another attack, but once more the powder made their situation dire. In fighting the fire, many of the kegs were now wet, rendering the powder unreliable. They had to keep their distance and hope to lose the Spanish in this daring, dangerous escape ploy of Rafe's.
"Master Afton, we draw near the graveyard,"
the Moor said, keeping the rifle close. His Persian accent sounded harder now, cut and sharp in its enunciation.
"There is a smell in the air, not like the sea."
Rafe nodded, his eyes peering forward. "I would agree. Forgive me, man, but your name?" The Moor gave Rafe a friendly smile. "I am Nasir Alas Yalhamed, Master Afton." "Nasir," Rafe smiled back. "Good to have an ally in someone as large as you. Do me this service and watch my back. I cannot tell if this crew, Sanders in particular, would trust me in what lies ahead."
"You see trouble in the graveyard." "If I am fortunate, no. If I am wrong..."
Rafe looked back at the closing Spanish ships. "At least I enjoyed a taste of leadership before passing into the next world."
"Snotty!" Sanders barked as he peered at the compass. "Look at this!" North, southwest, northeast, the dial bobbed and spun wildly. Sanders glared at Rafe as the compass became less and less reliable, finally giving no bearing whatsoever. They were now in the graveyard of lost ships. Rafe snatched up a telescope and stood at the aftercastle, focusing on their pursuers. The billowed sails of the lead Spanish vessel collapsed into a wrinkled mass of cloth, its sisters doing the same. "Looks like I would be making good on my word and buying everyone around, eh, Mr. Sanders?" Rafe's answer was nothing more than the sound of rushing water within his ears, perhaps coming from their speed as the wind remained strong. "Mr. Sanders?" Rafe turned to see what kept Nasir's and Sanders' attentions. The boundary rose high and continued to grow in diameter as they approached it. A circular barrier of water and light, solid, yet not an obstacle such as coral reef or crags. They could see jagged rocks shimmering behind it, but they knew whatever towered before them was no illusion. Despite the calm ocean surrounding it, a strong current rushed towards this wall of liquid brilliance, only to disappear inside a canvas of ripples. "No," Rafe thought. "Not a wall. A portal.
A gateway. And perhaps a means of escape."
He did not know where the voice originated from inside him, but it reached the crew to their basic instinct upon the sea.
"Secure the ship and hold on to something!" Rafe shouted.
"Now I know you are mad, Rafton!"
Sanders grabbed the rifle from Nasir's loose grasp and held them both at bay. The fuse was still lit and the hammer pulled back. He screamed over the growing thunder of water and air now surrounding the ship.
"I'm assuming command of this ship! And where shall we go, Sanders?"
Rafe stepped forward, his chest pressing against the barrel of the gun.
"Go on and pull the trigger. Perhaps the crew shall back you in your order to surrender to the Spanish."
"An invitation. Lovely."
"Suit yourself, Snotty," he said with a dry, hard smile as he pulled the trigger.
Rafe's own smile widened as he followed Sanders' eyes to the pan. The wind from the portal had blown it clean of powder. Nothing remained to ignite the chamber. Sanders lurched forward suddenly. He fought to stand, but then realized he could not, as he was being lifted off the deck. A stinging sensation removed itself from his back, returning his feet to the wooden planks. He turned to see Nasir behind him, the dagger in his grasp, now decorated with his blood. He fell to his knees before the Moor, his laugh a grotesque gurgle, before falling face down on the deck.
Was this to be an option for them? Turning on one another? Taking their own lives? It was either death by their own blades or the Spanish rope. Or challenging this rift, reaching from the depths of the Atlantic before them.
No, Rafe thought as he looked at the crew. Today is not their day to die.
I said secure the ship and hold fast to something, he called again. Steady the whipstaff. I would rather chance what resides here than face the Spanish magistrates.
The bowsprit to the king's calling was an impressive carving of Poseidon that bore a striking resemblance to King Henry. It was majestically pointing forward into the unknown horizon and was first to pierce the doorway of water and light. Ripples extended outward, a sight hypnotic and mysterious, from the point of entry as they continued to slip forward. Some of the crewmen ran for lower decks, while others held tight to masts and secured features of the ship, their curiosity overriding their fears. Rafe could hear the twist attempt stretch as the sails billowed full. The tears now gaping holes, still they moved forward, faster than they ever sailed before, across the open waters.
Hold fast, Rafe thought as the ship continued to disappear into the void. Hold your course until we reach the other side. His skin tingled lightly as he felt himself pass through the portal. The roar of air and water surrendered to an abrupt silence. It was not marred by any other outside noise or echoes, not even the natural sounds of wood creaking or sails catching an Atlantic breeze. Total. Complete silence. Rafe then realized he was holding his breath, his eyes lost in a brilliance that did not hurt to look straight into as sunlight would. The white light surrounding him grew in its intensity, washing over everything around him. Perhaps this was a final destination for him and his frightened crew. Could this rift be a gateway to heaven itself? He remembered uttering the place by name, shattering the silence. Heaven, he said with a smile.
Then, an abrupt darkness and hell erupted around him.